Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 47. This is May 13th, 2013. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and I'm here in beautiful Minnesota with the remnants of this nasty winter still hanging on, and I'll talk about that in a second, with temperatures tomorrow, thank God, rising to 90 degrees. So really looking forward to that. Also looking forward to bringing back my lovely and talented co-host, Robin Eduardo. She's eagerly waiting to come on to talk to you again here on the Writer's Lounge. And a brief intro to today's show, we will be talking to Shawanda Pugh, wrote Crimson Footprints, and she'll be on about quarter after the hour, wherever you are in these great United States and elsewhere. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriddell.com/blog. As always, go over there, take a look. We've got the reviews up from all the authors that we interview on the Blog Talk Radio show, and if you would like to listen to those authors, you can do that up in the upper left-hand corner of the page. There's a player there for your convenience. You just click on a button, and magically you will be able to listen to the show all the way back to August of 2011 would be the first show we did in August, so have a look over there. Also, of course, Facebook. We are there and hope you will go over there and like us. Just click the little button that says like, and also go to Twitter and follow us there. Of course, if you'd like to do it the old-fashioned way, we'd love to hear from you at our email at twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors next time around in 2 weeks would be May 27th. We are taking a break. This is Memorial Day, and we will be resting up for June 10th. When we bring on editor and writer Jennifer Gunn. She'll be here to talk to us on June 10th, which is Monday, and looking forward to that. Also, I want to promote the Magic Pen Web Design. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Go over there at magicpenwebdesign.com and fill out the free estimate form, and we'll help you get started in selling your next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And also caller instructions for today. As always, you can give us a call. We would love to hear from you. We don't get enough calls, but we would love for you to call into the show tonight when our author comes on, and you can talk to her and leave us comments or questions or whatever you'd like to do. 626-213-5613 or call toll-free at 877-878-1436. And at this point in time, I would love to introduce my wonderful and talented co-host. She's back from her rest there in New Jersey. Or New Jersey. I don't know how I came and pronounced it. I can't do that New Jersey thing. But, Robin, welcome back.
Thank you. You're so cute.
I try.
And I was thinking when... Yeah, I know.
I
was thinking when you...
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. This is so cute when we kind of like stumble over each other here. Let me say, I wanted to comment on one of the things that you flubbed before, where you said 19 when you were trying to give the date of when we began, or you began before I came on board, but and I thought that was so funny, you know, because we both come from that generation that, like, the 19, you know, whatevers were a big part of our lives.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, we won't give away our ages, but we're well into the 1900s here.
It's funny because I think about, you know, how it must have been for those that lived during the turn of the century and lived in, you know, the mid to the late 1800s, and all the wonders that they saw and everything. So I like to compare myself, at least, to those people who were able to live through multiple generations and see incredible changes in their lifetime. And I'm looking forward, and I know that I've seen incredible, you know, that I've witnessed incredible changes within my lifetime. So don't you worry about your flub. I know we're old, but hey.
it's kind of like, I used to like to go and think about the times in the 1860s. I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I just have a feeling that if I was in another life, that it probably would have been in 1860, right around the time that our dear president, Abraham Lincoln, was assassinated. And that's very intriguing and interesting to me, that period of history in America. And to think of the turn of the century, when all of those exciting things were happening, and then, of course, 1913, there was a very tragic event that happened in that year, 100 years ago today, and, well, not today, but 100 years ago, I think in April, the Titanic went down. So think about that time period in the dress and the technologies that were coming about then, which would be, I believe, the motor car and
my grandmother was alive during the time. She was born within those days, just before the Titanic sunk.
And just think of the people that are born now in 2013, and when we get around to 2077, 2080, what it's going to be like for those people. It's amazing to think about and how far we're going to go, and I'm sure we're going to go a long ways, and they'll be looking back at us now and saying, oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Somebody be listening to this show and going, give me a break. You know? So, I don't know.
Our own weird little time capsule right here.
Yeah. It's fun to think about the future.
Yeah,
it is. I like life. I would love to be around for that. Of course, I don't think I will be unless they come up with some amazing invention that would prolong my life into the 2070s or whatever, but I don't know. It's
real sci-fi stuff. Yeah. Keep our heads in jars, and then we can put those heads on robots and exist, carry on for another however many. You know, my head does tend to wander thinking about sci-fi topics or fantasy topics, so don't mind me.
it's very easy to slip into that role. Download our minds and our brains into a chip so we can live on.
Well, other
somehow.
People can experience our memories.
We could be like an artificial intelligence instead of the TomTom lady that talks to me in the car.
Oh,
maybe
goodness.
It would be either Robin Eduardo or me.
I would get people lost if I was the voice of TomTom or if I was just a companion. Whatever my memories and my whatever, they could kind of harness that to a robot and be somebody's companion. I feel so sorry for that poor recipient of my robot.
It would be fun, though. I don't know. It's going to be sad. It's going to be sad to leave this earth in this life, but it's going to happen at some point. But anyway, getting on with other more important things in the present, I wanted to tell you that, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we still have remnants of winter around here. And today, I finally got away up north to a campsite. And if people out there know what I've been struggling with over the last couple of years, it's been both financial and emotional and personal. And I finally was able to pull off getting a camper placed up at Mille Lacs Lake in northern Minnesota in a place called Aitken, Minnesota, and it's on the north shore of Mille Lacs. Mille Lacs Lake being one of the largest lakes in Minnesota, if not the largest. I believe it's 30 miles across, and it has a depth of ice up there in the winter of sometimes between 20 inches and 30 inches of ice. That's where everybody goes to ice fish. Well, in the last several days or last several weeks, that ice has been melting, and around the shorelines, boaters have been seen catching fish, but not, of course, wandering out too far, probably not even a mile out or half a mile out. That's as far as you can go. Well, anyway, the winds have shifted here, pushing in from the south. So all of that ice is being pushed into the north shore where I went today. And mm-hmm. we have ice waves, what I call ice waves, some of them 15 feet high. And I took some pictures. It's up on my Facebook. If you want to go over to Time Rydell, I think I posted it public, so anybody who isn't a friend will be able to see it. But, Robin, it's incredible. I would love to be up there tonight and tomorrow, because they say that that sounds like a freight train when it hits. And, of course, there's a lot of docks up there, and there's going to be a lot of damage from that mm-hmm. ice. In the next couple of days. But they say,
I can imagine the sound of the friction of the ice rubbing against, like if you have a wooden dock or you know, some type of structure. I could just imagine there has to be some kind of like you said, like a freight train. There has to be. But it's amazing. Mother Nature is amazing in her art and sculptures. Yes, that's so cool.
It is truly.
I mean, it's cool.
Awesome.
It's horrible, the damage, but it's cool to see something like that, though.
It is. It's incredibly awesome to see it.
Yes.
See it today, and then tomorrow being 90 degrees, they say by week's end, within another 3 to 4 days, all of that ice
going to be done.
Some of it right now, probably on the average, a lot of it's probably between 10 and 15 inches thick. A lot of that ice will be gone, and the boats will be out, and it'll be an open lake, which amazes me just in that
mm-hmm.
melt that fast, that quickly.
Yeah, the blink of an eye.
You could sit on the beach
and watch it melt.
And watch it melt.
Yeah.
You know?
That's pretty cool. Like watching the grass grow or corn grow.
Yeah. Well, I actually
you can
that.
From one day to the next see the difference so that, yeah. I can imagine.
For the first winter, I think in forever, I sat to watch the snow melt, and
mm-hmm.
It was incredible to watch, and I couldn't wait for it to go. And now, with what I saw today, I would love to be up there. Of course, I had to do the show tonight, and I had to come back, but I would love to see that. It's really an amazing sight to be up there, and I just can't wait for the ice to melt.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Really itching to get out there and do some fishing,
mm-hmm.
and big walleye.
It's been a long winter.
Yes.
It's been a long winter, so I'm sure you are really chomping at the bit to get out to nature and actually enjoy the sunshine and the fresh air and get some fishing. But, you know, in spring and summer, well, what we were talking about before, we're going to leap right from winter right into sweltering, sticky, hot summer. That's my prediction. Sorry. Oh, the little screeching sound. I don't know if you heard it. My dog and cat, they wrestle, and they were right outside the door, and they go at it so hard, they push the door right open, and then he yelped. So I don't know if you heard it, but just so anybody doesn't think I have murdered animals, I don't know. Something going on over here.
Yeah.
My crazy pets.
Yeah. We all got to
sorry about that.
It's great no matter what they're doing. I've got mine locked up because they like to paw on the door when I'm doing the show, and I can't stand that scratchy claw against glass sound.
Yeah.
So,
thought the door was shut enough, but apparently, I mean, well, my cat's kind of large, so I suppose if they really went in at each other, just swinging his body against the door would be enough.
Yeah.
He's a very large cat. I think he's like almost 18 pounds now.
Wow. Well,
yeah, he's a big boy. Yeah.
Well, Robin, let's get on with the rest of the show here and introduce our special guest. She's waiting patiently.
Mm-hmm.
I see her on the switchboard holding for us. And we'd like to talk about Crimson Footprints. It was written by Shawanda Pugh and published by Delphine Publications in 2012. You may purchase it over at Amazon.com Kindle, of course, and you can visit the author on Facebook. This is what Amazon has to say about her book. On the night of her brother's murder, Dina Hammond stumbles upon Takumi Tanaka, lost and on the wrong end of a .32 caliber. After rescuing him from the certain fate, driving through the hood in a Porsche will bring, a sweet kind of friendship begins. A balm for her grief, maybe, Dina likes to think. It happened the day her white mother killed her black father. Or maybe it was always a part of them, like DNA gone bad. Whatever the case, Dina knows that her family would never approve. Hell, never acknowledged her fast-growing love for Takumi. And had he never made love to her that way, in that unraveling, soul-searching sort of way, she could have done the same. But love is a devil that way. So their game begins. On where they hide, well, I'm sorry, one where they hide what they are from everyone. Anyone, and Tak understands this for now. After all, Dina's career hinges on the favor of her mentor and boss, his hard ass of a father. And the Hammond family is already stretched thin with grief, yet each step Dina takes forward toward family and career brings her closer to an acceptance she's never had and away from him. And this is what I wrote in my review of the book. The interwoven complexities of life, which are inherent in people who are forced to endure a clash of cultures and the ugliness of being among both the rich and the poor, can sometimes result in a bleeding away of prejudice and the rebirth of love. Dina, a young woman who was born and raised in a beloved but impoverished and violent-prone African-American family, sets out on a dream to become an architect. Her dream never falters, but the challenges she faces when she falls in love with her boss's son, a Japanese-American, would send sparks through both families. The secret is kept, but for now, the secret is kept, but for how long will the burning secret and their fast and enduring love last? This romantic tale is so richly told, with the characters and places so eloquently described, I had to keep reminding myself that this was written by a first-time author. Shawanda Pugh is destined to be an author that you will want to follow. Crimson Footprints is very absorbing, with a storyline that will touch many emotions. And with that, I would like to push the magic button here in the Writer's Lounge and bring aboard Shawanda. Are you there?
I'm here. Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. And where are you calling from?
Sunny Miami, and I'm here listening to you guys gripe about the weather, so I thought maybe I should mention it.
Yeah, I knew that, and that's why I started off with my little winter story about the ice breaking up here, and hopefully I know you don't have any ice down there. But
no, it's been a long time since I've seen ice, but I will say I was pretty sympathetic to you guys. You know, I grew up in Boston, but, you know, I fled. For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm down here enjoying the bit of sun. That will get to you guys eventually.
Well, I hope so, because we really need it.
It's been better here.
Yeah.
And where are you?
Yeah. I'm in New Jersey. It's a little bit better here than where Tom is, but it has been a long winter, and I'm sure even down far south as Florida is that it's been a long winter anyway for everybody across the board. So,
yeah, I would imagine
enjoy
more
spring
so
earlier.
Central Florida, that sort of thing, and usually doesn't make its way to us. We may get two or three days of what you guys would consider spring. We'd call it winter. Maybe 50 degrees, 45. That's frigid to us. So
yeah,
we get two or three days of that, and we're done.
They get cold and they put sweaters on. They call it winter time. So it's
we put more than sweaters on. Believe that.
Well, Shawanda, I really loved your book. You have quite a talent. You have a lot of experience as far as schooling and all of that behind you. Could you do us a favor and read an excerpt from your book?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. Let me pull one up here for you. And we are just going to take this from pretty early on. I don't want to give too much away for anyone who hasn't read anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wish that I didn't want my family's love so bad. I wish I could be one of those people who wore leather jackets and just didn't give a damn. Tak shot her a look. You'd be musty if you wore a leather jacket in this heat. Dina grinned. You know what I mean. He shrugged. Who doesn't want a decent family, Dee? It's not much to ask for. Tech paused to pluck a seashell from the sand, chipped and polished by time. It shone under the glint of a fast-setting sun. I don't know the answers, he said, but they seem to be in things like this. He held up the shell. I don't follow. He shrugged. Well, think about it. What's a shell? It's just a hard, protective outer layer. He hurled it into the ocean. The same is true with family. They're an outer layer, a protection from the world. At least that's what they're supposed to be. He paused. Think about what happens when you screw with an animal that has one of those hard shells. What does he do? He goes into it. Right, he retreats. Tack thumbed the shell thoughtfully. Now imagine if you were to rip the shell off a turtle and expose him. What do you think you'd find? Dina cringed. Something soft and hurting. And dead, if not close to it. So our hypothetical turtle, who's able to withstand our shell transplant, needs another shell, another form of protection. And so do you. Tack handed the grooved and sand-polished subject to Dina. She looked down at it. So how have I been surviving all this time? What's my shell? Tack grinned. Tell you what, I'll let you know when I crack it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
And Shawanda, how long have you been writing, and who or what inspired you to write this wonderful work that you just completed?
Well, I started writing as a hobby, as probably most writers do, at a very, very young age, but I didn't exactly take it seriously. I went to college. I majored in political science. I went on to law school. I had a very brief stint in law school before just kind of getting up and walking out one day with an epiphany, realizing that I didn't actually want to be a lawyer, and I didn't know why I was even there. I think it was, you know, sort of an imposition of other people's wants that I had taken on as my own. And once I did that and I was off and left with my thoughts, they naturally returned to writing. Writing had always been that one constant love of mine. So I decided that I needed to get some instruction since I hadn't been devoting myself to it in a manner that would be consistent with pursuing it as a career. So I went and I enrolled in a master's program and just really decided to buckle down and find out what writing was about and what I needed to do to become a professional writer. Now, the story of Crimson Footprints came about while I was in that writing program, and it ended up being my thesis for my master's, a much shortened version of it. That version was probably 60, 75 pages, and I expanded it for publication after I'd graduated. But it was the result of one of those unwanted assignments in class that you grudgingly do. And yeah, it was one of those, and I saw no purpose in it, and I was completely reluctant, and I sat down, and we were supposed to go and people watch, and we were supposed to devise a character after someone kind of sparked something in us, and I thought, this is stupid. No one's going to do that. They're just people. You see people every day. And I went and I sat down at a Barnes & Noble, and I was there for a couple of hours, and in walks this guy, and he had this, you know, really urban look. He had lots of tattoos, the baggy T-shirt, the baggy jeans, that sort of thing. And he went straight to the literary fiction, and he picked up Edgar Allan Poe, and he had his nose to the spine, and that was my reaction. And I was just sitting there, and I was like, well, that goes to show you. And yep. That was how I came up with the hero in Crimson Footprints, Tack. He was this person that he was not what you expected when you saw him. He's very kind of bohemian and just kind of all over the place, and he's this artist and free thinker, and he's just not what you would expect when you look at him. And that's where the idea started, and the other characters kind of came about as a result of figuring out him and what kind of person he would be attracted to and that sort of thing.
It's really interesting. And people watching is is a lot of fun, not only for us writers, but for other people too, to just sit around and just watch and imagine, try to imagine the lives of these people that we see. We only see the faces, we don't see underneath, like sort of
right.
what you're talking about, the shell, you know. We see the shell of the person, we don't
mm-hmm.
know the person, and until we would to perhaps sit down with them and have a chat with them, we wouldn't know what they're really all about. So it's interesting, you know, in that. And also, of course, in your book, you know, Dina is very unique, of course, and you just pointed that out, is her being interested in tech, but an interesting character, and she has an abundance of knowledge as an architect.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read it, I kept thinking, gosh, they always tell us to write what we know. And is this subject an interest to you? Did you do a lot of research, or do you have a history of architecture in your knowledge base?
Yeah, it's funny that you ask me that. I usually get that question, and I even had an architect tell me, well, she wrote me not long after the book came out, and she wanted to know where I'd gotten my degree from in architecture, and I said, I'm not an architect, but, you know, it's good to know that I got
good
it right.
You.
But I say that to say that I did a lot of research, and whenever I write something, I invest tons of research. And it's also an interesting question because I was at the Tucson Festival of Books 2 months ago, and I did a workshop panel on writing what you know. And I don't necessarily subscribe to the writing what you know, obviously. What I told them was that because what we know is so limited in terms of our immediate experience, it's really much smaller than we even think it is. I say
mm-hmm.
less
mm-hmm.
of write what you know, and I say write what you're willing to learn. Write what fascinates mm-hmm. you. Write what you're willing to devote time and energy
that
to.
That is so true.
Write
what
you're interested in.
It's so unboring, too, to write
yeah,
what you
exactly.
don't know. It's so unboring. It's, I mean, why do I want to write what I know? I want to learn more stuff about life and sort of, you know, try to add depth to my character without, you know, diving into my knowledge and my history. I would like to learn more about somebody outside of that realm.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly my point, because I told them, I said, okay, I'm African-American, but I can't write about the African-American experience. So then when I said that, I had a room full of people staring at me like, you know, what the heck are you talking about? And I said, what I can write about is about what it was like to be me in this particular city at this particular time and this particular class living in this set of experiences. That isn't the African-American experience. That's the Shawanda experience. And
that's
the
right.
difference. That is
yes.
so small in comparison to the whole of the canvas. You need to keep that in mind.
That's so refreshing.
And that was the other thing that I brought up, because I have a lot of authors ask me about, you know, writing characters of different ethnicities because Tak is Japanese. And they wanted to know, you know, how did I approach that? Did I feel intimidated? How was I able to gather so much information? And a lot of it was research, but a lot of it just wasn't out there to find. And I kind of had to dig and reach out to people, and I reached out to people that I didn't even know. There was this one journalist, Gil Asakawa, that wrote Being Japanese American, and I bought that book when I first started working on Crimson Footprints, and I read it cover to cover, but there was nothing else out there. So what I did was I jumped on Facebook, and I found Gil, and I said, hey, look, I need help. I'm trying to create this character, but there isn't enough out there. And I shot him with questions all the time. And even now, I'm working on the third book in the series, and I just talked to Gil like maybe a week ago, and I'm still asking him questions. And I make sure that I pay attention to detail, and you just have to keep that interest, and you're able to, you know, create these characters. Because, you know, we all have the universal experience. There are differences mm-hmm. among us, but we all have that universal experience, and that's really what the novel is about. That's what Crimson Footprints is about, mm-hmm. and that's what other books out there are about, that kind of human experience that's, you know, really the same for all of us.
So obviously,
that's the best.
Yeah, it is.
I was just going to say that that's the best way to go about doing anything with writing or just in life
right.
anyway, because we draw so many. It's very easy to fall into the habit to presume to know. something about somebody based on, well, media, you know, sort of gives us a generalized or stereotypical idea,
right.
And it's easy to fall into that trap. And
right.
I mean, I live in a very cosmopolitan area. I'm right. I could swim across the Staten Island. I'm right across from New York City, and
yeah.
Philly's right here. So I mean, I know what you're saying. People watching is a hobby of mine. My daughter accuses me of being like a fortune teller because my husband and I we like to like watch people and then make up whole stories around
oh, yeah.
you know what kind of information we might draw from their behaviors or the way they dress or their speech, you know,
right.
all that sort of thing. So yeah,
right.
I get you, but and it's interesting. And I kind of like the idea that you do say that it's not a matter of writing what you know, but to, you know, write what you're interested in. But also you're deferring to other people. If you have a question, you're reaching out to other authors who can kind of, you know,
right,
help you
right.
along the way. We should all, you know, kind of stick together and not be afraid to reach out to our favorite authors or each other fellow self-published authors or traditionally
totally.
Published authors. Yeah, I love
right.
this. I'm very interested in you, girl.
Well, thank you. I always say it doesn't hurt to ask because even if they don't
yeah.
answer, you're no worse off than you were before
right.
you asked.
There's no stupid questions.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, there really isn't because you're just stupid for not asking the questions, actually.
Basically, yeah.
yeah. And, of course, Shawanda, we know that you do have quite an education background, and you just alluded a little bit to it here in the beginning of the show, but your education did impact your writing. Can you tell us about that? You touched on some classes that you took. I believe that there would be creative writing classes.
Yeah, my master's is in writing, so I took, you know, fiction writing and writing literary nonfiction and just a bunch of things that really helped, you know. Actually, I took the history of the English language and grammar and you name it. So I can wear a bunch of different hats. I can edit. I can do all those things. But I did that. Just as a way to kind of, you know, just get in the door because I was so far on the other side. I had in my mind that I wanted to be a lawyer, and there's a very rigid path to become a lawyer. You know that you need to go to school, you need to pass this test, you need to sit for the bar, and so on and so forth. And so I approached writing the same way, and I realized that, you know, there's this wide, you know, gamut of options that are out there. And mine isn't necessarily the path, but it is one of the paths, and I do feel like it was really beneficial as far as helping me kind of leap over some of the hurdles that, you know, newer authors experience just from, you
mm-hmm.
know, not having that similar instruction.
Do you see yourself writing a sort of a John Grisham tale at some point in your career?
Oh, you know, I've been asked about that. I don't really think I would go as far as like a legal thriller. I'm kind of moving in the other direction. I've been reading a lot of like dystopian fiction and that sort of thing. And my first love was actually horror. I started out reading really young the Stephen Kings and the Dean Koontz and all of that. And when I was at the Tucson Festival of Books, R.L. Stein was there, and I was 10 again.
Wow.
And so I'm kind of thinking about, you know, dabbling back in the dystopian craze that's kind of going on right now, you know, the Hunger Games and that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But that's not like seriously where I'm at. I have like a ton of books that I need to like release before then. So it's just something that I'm kind of toying with, like more in that direction.
So you kind of write down ideas as they come to you just to come back
right.
to maybe revisit
right.
them later and, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll write down an idea. Sometimes it'll be like a few words on a scrap of paper. Sometimes it'll be like a whole scene mm-hmm. if it presents itself to me. And I have like Windows Office on my cell phone so
mm-hmm.
I can like
mm-hmm.
go into Microsoft Word and type out a scene while I'm, you know, not even at home. So I'll do that
wow.
sometimes if I just need to like get it out or whatever.
Mm. And of course.
And you could always build on it later. Yeah.
Build on it.
I didn't even know you could do that on your phone.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. Robin, get rid of times here, Robin. It's 20.
You know, I'm still, listen, I'm still banging two rocks together, okay? Give me a
come
break.
Come on, Robin.
I got the tin can and the string.
Well, keep banging away, Robin. Whatever you're doing a good job. So.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. Whatever works.
Yeah.
I ask my kids when I have a question. I call my teens in and ask them how do you get on Internet Explorer? No, I'm not that bad, but
yeah.
What button do
Shawanda,
I press?
Shawanda, we talked about writing what you know, and of course your book is pretty much a romance. So, if you wouldn't mind, can you tell us what do you think are some of the most important ingredients in a lasting love? In other words, your two characters, what is it that would cause them to live forever and ever and ever and ever together?
It's funny. I can approach that in a number of ways. I tend to be more of a scholar, academic type than a writer. I actually think of myself as a scholar first and a writer second. And I actually did some research and like older couples and what they communicate as far as being the ingredients of what'll bring longevity versus what doesn't work. And most of the things that come up have to do with like compromise and communication and that sort of thing. But I would go so far as to say really just being willing to forgive, because you're going to get ticked off inevitably at some point in time. And it's just that, you know, willing to persevere and forgive and jump in the ring one more time for one more round.
That's true.
I've been with my husband 20 years, and you hit it on the nail. That is it.
Yeah,
that
if
really
you walk in
it.
Thinking it's going to be all rosy, it will be for about the first couple of days.
Yeah, you could toss that right out the window.
Yeah, you know, so.
I'm expecting the worst, so when the good stuff comes, I can really, like, celebrate and say yes, okay?
Yeah, that works too.
Well, no, I'm exaggerating it. But no, you really did. You nailed it. That's exactly what it is.
Love is a many splendored thing, isn't it?
Yes.
That's unique, isn't it?
Yeah. Sometimes you got to kiss a lot of toads too. So
Well,
this toad has had fun in his life, so I'm ready to toad along myself. So but,
he wants to get Shawanda, froggy.
That's right. And Shawanda, you just touched.
Mm-hmm.
Go onto your phone to do some of your writing, which I find interesting, and I think that's really cool that you can get the thoughts down on your technical device. Where do you go? Where's your favorite place to go to write, and how do you get in the mood to write?
Since I work at home, I'm even before, you know, I published the Crimson Footprint series, I was a freelance writer and an editor and that kind of thing. And I have this write anywhere mentality. So sometimes I'm on the couch. Sometimes I'm out on the patio overlooking the city. Sometimes I'm in my room and my kid's right next to me pulling on my shirt. You know, so it's really just wherever I can get a minute in edgewise. But ideally just quiet time after bedtime alone in my house works for me. Now, as for the mood, silence usually does it for me, but if I'm stumbling or stuck or just can't convey some emotion, I'll usually turn to music, and the sort of music I'll listen to will depend on what I need to happen in that scene. And I found that, you know, it will really kind of spur me towards what I'm trying to get down.
That's quite interesting. So when I don't want to give away a lot of your story in your book, but there is a violent part in your book. There's a couple of spots where there's a bit of violence there. What kind of songs would you listen to if you needed violence in a book?
Oh, yeah. sometimes I'll listen to, like, some really heavy, really angry, like, hard metal or, like, some rap or something like that. It really does depend. But, yeah, I have, like, 50 stations on Pandora, and I already know where to go. I'll just try one. If that's not working for me, I try another one.
Okay.
And, like, my characters have their own stations and everything. I really have it down to a science.
Wow. And I didn't ask you about developing your characters. You had touched on developing your characters. But I found when I read your characters, they're so rich. And I thought, well, this writer took a lot of time researching her characters and really developing them, and it sounds like you really have, right down to the music that they like.
I actually have, like, little encyclopedias for my series, like this one, the Crimson Footprint series. It has, like, Dina's entire family tree in it, and I have, like, short descriptions of what each person looks like, their approximate age, distance between their ages, so you're not, you know, making, like, the mistakes that you find with some people where 1 minute the person's hair is brown and the next is blonde and, you know, that kind of thing. Just those basic things you can avoid. So whenever I make some kind of notation about a character, I'll go and cross-reference it and I'll have it for later.
I know of an author who actually created her characters using The Sims computer game.
I love The Sims.
Yeah, she actually created what her characters would look like using the Sims game format. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, what you're doing is, it's not unheard of. It's just, I think that's really cool that you go that far to not only to write it all down and fill out the whole background and what they look like. I mean, that's really going in, girl. But I love it. I can really respect that, because that's what a successful writer, I mean, it's a hallmark that you are taking your craft seriously, and you want to make sure that all your, you know, your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted, because there's readers that will come back, like you said, that if the hair is different or there's something, she was eating an apple one moment and then, you know, where'd the apple go or where, you know, different things like that.
And just
so
as importantly,
cool.
It takes them out of the story, and you don't want for a minute for them to realize, you know, to remember that they're reading and not just, you know, totally immersed in what's going on.
Yeah, you snap out of it. That
suspension of disbelief. Right, now you have to try and capture their attention again.
So, Shawanda, what, you know, when you get this book published, how has your family and friends responded to the book? Are they surprised? Are they, you know, they kind of say, well, you know, Shawanda's always been a good writer, so we're not surprised. And what was the reaction like?
It was mixed. There was a bit of everything. You have to remember that when I started, I was in law school, and I left law school, and that wasn't received very well.
Oh.
And I left law school to become a writer, a fiction writer.
Ah.
So, yeah, that wasn't exactly the most popular thing I could have done. And, you know, well, I was on scholarship and, you know, all that great stuff. You know, I probably looked like a maniac to, you know, a couple of people. But afterwards, you know, I stuck to it, I finished and that kind of thing. And even, you know, after I finished the degree, you know, it was, well, now are you going to go to law school? And so, and, you know, once the book came out and, you know, it was received well and, you know, it was in USA Today and that kind of thing. And then there was people began to move over to my side. And, well, she always did want to write and she always was a pretty good writer. And,
follow your dream and do what you love to do. If it isn't being a lawyer, then maybe there's a book in your future. So
you know, you're the one who has to live in your skin. So
you better enjoy the time in it. We talked about him earlier, John Grisham. There's a great example. There was a guy that was thick in it. He was thick in the law, and he moved over to being an author. So
And
people followed him.
Yeah, you know, the short time that I was in law school, I was there and I said, this is not for me. This sucks. And I already know it. And, you know, it was easy. It was, you know, writing was always that thing that was constant for me, and I never took it seriously because other people didn't take it seriously. And that's
right.
not a good enough reason.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah, the whole thing, follow your dreams. It's
yeah,
really,
yeah.
or follow your heart, or any of those type of sayings. I mean, it's not just a saying. It really
right.
is true. You have to enjoy what you do. And if you don't
exactly.
enjoy what you do, it becomes a grind. And I mean, really, if you could make it work, and obviously you have,
right.
so now you're reaping the rewards of now everybody's like, oh, yes, we always knew she was a writer, and
poor,
now they're supporting it. It's like, where were you people 10 years ago? Where's this coming from? Who stole my mother? Who is this pod person
right,
before
right.
me? No, because
well,
that's what I get. I get it all the time.
And shapes and sizes. And,
you gotta,
yeah.
you gotta love what you do, and not only
because it's such a risk. You go from a lawyer to a writer. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's
yeah.
what they're thinking. What are
yeah.
you doing?
Yeah, that's weird. I went from being a printer to a security guard, and I don't regret it at all. I went from making $7.42 an hour back in 19. Now I'm going to give my age away here, so pay attention. 1982, I left printing.
Wait, I didn't catch that. What year?
1982.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You weren't supposed
to
laugh.
I went from 7.42 down to 3.35 an hour, and I remember walking in and talking to my fiance, who wasn't working herself, and I remember saying, you're not going to believe this, Jennifer, but I love what I'm doing. This is after
yeah.
a night being a security guard, and she says, you what? So that's it. You got to love what you're doing, and Shawanda, it's good for you to do it, and I'm already a follower. I'm going to be paying attention to your career as you continue on, but we do know that it isn't just one book that you wrote in this series. The second the second portion of the story
yeah.
is already out. Can you tell us a little bit about the next novel?
Sequel.
Sure. Yeah, the sequel is based on Dina's younger sister, who, you know, has that secondary role.
I love that character. I absolutely love that character.
Yeah, she invokes some pretty strong emotions in people. And when the first book came out and, you know, that was done, people wanted to know, you know, well, what are you going to do with her? You're clearly not done with her character. Well, I didn't want to show my hand, but I'd already begun working on the second book, and she's the central figure in that, and in the beginning she's just the way we left her, and you know, she's this tortured person that really has descended into, you know, all sorts of debauchery and
did
nonsense.
You know, here's the attached question to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know when you wrote that character in that first book that she would have such a great appeal?
I didn't know that she would
see, now that,
strong
that
emotions
me,
out of people.
That to
yeah,
me
resonate with
that,
so many people.
That to me is magic, and it's what we get out of our own writing when somebody finds something there, and obviously a lot of people did, because I'm included in that group. I love that character, and I was just blown away by her, and I thought, oh, we've got to hear more from her.
Yeah,
so
well,
I think that's
she's
pretty
the simple
incredible
one in that one.
Actually, do that. That's really cool.
And I started out with a really small goal with her because I knew that she was going to be troubled, and I didn't want to present Dina's family as just this cookie cutter family that just happens to be in bad circumstances. I wanted to show how bad circumstances could affect people, and with her character, it wasn't so much explaining how she could do these horrible things or how these horrible things could happen to her. I started with the idea of what she was, and I went backwards. How did she become this way? And in order for me to figure out how she became that way, I asked myself the question, what would it take for me to become that way? And what would have to happen to an ordinary person for them to change in such a major way, to turn out so horribly? And that's how I came up with that character and the things that she went through. It was really just me answering that question of how, you know, any one of us could become as tortured as she was.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome.
And that's that so many people can resonate with the character. That's what it's all about, a human interest story that just grasps onto the reader latches onto that and resonates with that character and can see themselves in her and,
right.
and kind of so they're looking forward to see to hear more about her story or to read more about her story and what's going
right.
on.
Right. I had no idea that she would be, you know, such a central figure because she was really just supposed to be one more obstacle, you know, for Dina, but she kind of took on this life of her own. And, you know, when the book came out, people were, you know, writing me constantly, like, you know, what were you thinking with her? They either loved her or they hated her but wanted to hear more about her.
Actually received feedback, and your the second novel, the sequel is based, I mean, you developing her character further is based on the feedback that you've received from your readers. Is that's basically what you're saying?
Not really. I had already started working on the sequel before the first book was out, and I was about halfway through it when I started getting the feedback about her, and I absorbed some of that, and I didn't realize that people felt so strongly about her. So I really did have to go back and look at what I'd done with her in the second one because I didn't realize I had invoked so many emotions and creating her. So I did alter her some. I think I provided more depth after hearing back from people, but the skeleton of the story was already like half complete before I ever heard from anyone. But I still
her character wanted to come out. Her character was just wanting to be written. I mean, not written, but explored more. And
So
you just revisited that. Oh, cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, it is. Okay,
well,
now you got both of those books out after, obviously, the first one. What was the publishing process like for you? What kind of challenges did you have going through that process?
I started out the traditional route. I sent queries out to a bunch of agents. I had an agent who shopped me around for about a year, and, you know, we heard from some really major publishing houses that made, you know, suggestions about the story, so I tweaked certain things. You know, I got feedback like, well, I would publish it if you changed this, and, you know, most of the changes were minor, but there was one offer where it was like a really, you know, major change, and I wasn't okay with that. They wanted her family, Dina's family, to not actually be poor, so I just completely rejected that one outright. And after about that year or so, me and my agent parted ways, and I self-published, and I did that. The book was out on its own maybe about 3 months, and then Delphine, I actually was doing a radio interview, and the owner, the CEO of Delphine, was also part of the radio interview, and she and I kind of connected then, and she was like, you know, well, I'm really interested in your book, and, you know, we just kind of started talking there, and then I sent her a copy of the book, and she made me an offer.
Well,
serendipitous meeting. That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I ran into my publisher. It's a very similar thing. She offered me a contract basically sight unseen. Because of people. Well, I mean, she's not a major traditional publisher, but, I mean, she's small press, but still traditional. And she's established from the 80s and everything with traditional publishers, with Tor and, you know, big houses. So it's kind of interesting to go through that. And when you just click, and when people give you that opportunity just to get your foot in the door.
Right,
you know,
I know it sounds crazy, but I think what I appreciated most of all in the process were those rejections that I got earlier on.
Yeah.
And they
have that guidance.
Feedback, and we're talking, you know, feedback from people who are, you know, really influential in the industry. They're with these major houses, and they're saying, well, it's a good story, but you could do this and you could do that.
Yes.
And after a while, I said, okay, well, let me do that, and then let me sell it. So
How many rejection letters did you get?
Oh, wow. I would probably say maybe 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's inspiring to a lot of us writers who are struggling because, once again, I'm sure I'm not alone, and I'm not, because if you go to the Amazon site and look at the reviews, you're pushing 5 stars easy. And there's quite a few reviews. I think the last time I was over there, I could be wrong, but there was like over 50 reviews. It's very rare that you see the stars pushed up that high, especially for a first-time author. So you've done very well.
Well, thank you.
You had the right people giving you that guidance, and it's nice that when you did receive some kind of feedback, even in your rejections, that you were able to take, if during the times that you did receive any kind of actual feedback and not a form letter, but, you know, something that you could actually take and use it and work with it. And I think that that's a very important message for everybody who's a writer.
That critique.
It's not a criticism of you. It's something to learn from and to improve upon.
Absolutely.
Right, and you really need to look at everything that way. I would say that when I entered the writing program at Nova Southeastern, I was nowhere near the caliber of writer that I am. I look back at samples that I sent them, and I say, wow, I don't think I would have admitted me. They clearly, you know, saw something.
They saw the diamond in the rough.
Right. They saw something, and they really molded me, and they did it with, you know, a lot of tough love. I still hear their voices, you know, sometimes in the background, like, Shawanda, what are you doing? Take that adverb out. You know, I hear them constantly when I'm writing. And it's good to have those people in your life that are willing to tell you things like take that adverb out or that character.
Be honest, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you need the cheerleaders that love whatever you write. You need those, but you also need people that are just going to, you know, give it to you straight.
Yeah, Shawanda, we're getting close to the end here. We have a little over 2 minutes left, but it's been great having you on the show on the Writer's Lounge. And we hope you'll come back to visit us again. I really would like to see you at some point become a professor. Now, here's another challenge for you, because I would love to be in a class and learn.
I've been thinking about going back and getting my PhD.
That would be awesome.
I would love to sit in a class and get some pointers from you, and I think a lot of us would. And that's why I'd like to.
It would be a great way for her to pay it forward, for sure.
Yeah. We could bring
It's something to definitely think about, and I really enjoyed my time.
Even if it was a little small little writers group, a little club or something, you know, it's good because you can help other people as you were helped. That would be very
true.
That would be awesome.
Shawanda,
Shawanda,
where could people find you on the internet?
I'm a real avid social networker, so you can always find me on Facebook, on Twitter. Novelist Shawanda Pugh at Twitter. I'm just Shawanda P. You can also find me at ShawandaPugh.com. You can find me on Goodreads. I actually have a Goodreads giveaway that has about 2 days left on book two. So if you've already read book one, you can go ahead and enter that giveaway for book two, and you can get an autographed copy in the U.S., Canada, Japan, a couple of other countries, I forget. But, definitely find me on Goodreads, on Twitter, on Facebook, all the usual places, and you can find my travel itinerary on Amazon.
Very good. Shawanda, thank you so much for being on the program. We will talk to you again sometime.
I hope soon. You guys take care.
Yep. Bye-bye. Well, Robin, that's your name.
Yes.
I want to thank you again for being back with me. I don't feel so alone and in a tunnel all by myself, so it's nice
to hear your
warmth and your love here. So I really appreciate that greatly. And we look for you on June 10th. We're going to take quite a few weeks off here to absorb the summer coming and relax. We hope everybody else will enjoy, and we will see you back here on June 10th. And Robin, mm-hmm. this is your cue.
Well, as always, it's good reading and good writing. We'll see you again next time on the Writer's Lounge.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather.